The following program is produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.
Sooner or later, you can bet your life that every Jew in this building is going to say the same thing. He's a little too Jewish for my taste.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning is DJ Schneeweiss, Anti-Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions Director for the Israeli Foreign Ministry. We'll also have visits from our two Jewish expert on the international scene, Tom Price, and our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbert. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. Two Jewish is sponsored this morning by Temple Emmanuel, a Reformed Jewish community for all of Tucson. Call 327-4501 for information on Arizona's finest synagogue, the only full-service Reformed congregation in southern Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. I recently went to Israel on a spectacularly interesting trip sponsored by the Israeli Foreign Ministry and the World Zionist Organization. And last week here on Two Jewish, I filled you in on many of the political implications of the stuff going on right now in Israel and with the Palestinians. In fact, today's guest on Two Jewish, DJ Schneeweiss, is a brilliant representative of the Israeli Foreign Ministry. He'll explain in detail how Israel's responding to its many propaganda challenges today. And briefly, with all the political maneuvering going on now between President Obama and Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, and with all the Palestinian convulsions as they move towards declaring a state unilaterally in September, I don't expect a comprehensive peace agreement anytime soon, or not so soon. And neither should anyone else. Certainly not between Hamas and anyone. Remember, Hamas is now again in close partnership with Fatah and the Palestinian leadership, which means there won't be peace soon between Palestinians and Israel. And the anti-Israel forces and the many anti-Semites out there will continue to try to demonize Israel and attack her legitimacy and send missiles and explosives and guns to her enemies. It just won't stop. But I'm about to give you the most un-Jewish advice you will ever hear. That reminds me of an old Jewish joke from back in the days when people still sent telegrams. The telegram arrives. "Dear Abe," it reads, "start worrying. Details to follow." Well, here it is, that incredibly un-Jewish advice from Rabbi Kohan on Two Jewish. Don't worry so much about Israel. I can tell you that even without that elusive peace agreement, Israel is flourishing, blossoming, growing, developing, vibrant, and highly, highly successful. So don't worry so much. It's not really that bad. In fact, it's not bad at all in Israel now. First, a simple truth. The Israeli economy is flourishing while ours languishes. I would trade Ben Bernanke, our Fed chief, for Stanley Fisher, the head of the Israeli financial system, right now, even up, without even a shortstop to be named later. In fact, anybody ought to make that deal today, our Jewish economic expert for theirs, because Israel has floated through this recession with virtually none of the awful consequences we here in the United States have experienced. From my hotel room in what was once a dilapidated part of Jerusalem, I could see 9 or 10 huge construction cranes, all building luxury apartments or developments, big, gorgeous projects faced with Jerusalem stone. More construction than I have seen in the state of Arizona in the past 3 years combined. There's a sleek new light rail system running its last trial circuits before opening that'll connect all of Jerusalem to the great new Israeli rail system. It is elegant and ultra-modern, and it is running in one of the great ancient cities in the world. Wow. Tel Aviv is flourishing, filled with successful high-tech and medical technology companies and late-night scenes in bars you would not imagine. The countryside is beautiful and verdant, the recent drought over after a very wet winter. Israel is doing pretty magnificently. In fact, the Foreign Ministry building that we spent so much time in when I was there itself is magnificent, even if the workers don't actually like it. After all, they are Jews. They have to complain about something, don't they? You know, we took a break one day on our Rabbi's Engaging with Israel trip while we were visiting Sderot, the Israeli town that has been hit by perhaps 8,000 missiles shot from Gaza over the last 10 years. The residents have suffered terribly, seen relatives and friends die, have generations of children who need regular psychological help for post-traumatic stress disorder. They've seen perhaps a third of the town move away because of the constant threat of Qassam rockets falling on them, shot thoughtfully by their Arab terrorist neighbors just over the border. And yet, the people in Sderot do not leave. Instead, they built an indoor playground at a cost of 13 million shekels, roughly $3.5 million, that is covered in hardened concrete. It includes play areas for kids, from toddlers to teens, basketball courts, a climbing wall, ping pong tables, air hockey, video consoles, and much, much more. Without that hardened concrete shell that protects kids from rockets, it would probably have cost a quarter of that. But they were determined to stay in Sderot and not be pushed out by the mindless hatred of their enemies and to protect their children. And so, our group, a bunch of Orthodox conservative and Reform rabbis, got to play on their courts and enjoy a great air-conditioned facility, all built davka in the face of terrorists. Israelis are not about to be pushed out of Israel. While their enemies build bombs, they build lives and deep roots. Nowhere else in the Middle East can you possibly find such commitment and determination. It reminds me of another old joke. As a result of global warming, a new flood is being predicted by all the world's top scientists. It'll be horrendous. It'll wipe out most of the world's population. And the flood is going to be here in 3 or 4 days, the joke goes. People start to show up on television giving advice. On one program, the Pope, the Dalai Lama, and the Israeli chief rabbi are on together. The Pope says it's still not too late before the end of the world to accept Jesus. The Dalai Lama says, I appeal to all of humanity to follow Buddhist teachings. You can find nirvana after the disaster. But the chief rabbi has a totally different message. He looks at the camera and says, my people, we have 2 or 3 days to learn how to live underwater. And so, the people of Sderot have learned to live underwater, or under missiles anyway. What a gift it is to have a Jewish state filled with such commitment and life and energy and success. And yes, stress. I mean, what would Israel be without all the Jewish need for angst and sorrows? When we take our next Temple Emmanuel trip to Israel in June of 2012 with Rabbi Sam Kohan of Two Jewish, come along, see for yourself. Because no matter what the propagandists tell you, this is one of the truly great countries on earth, ever. And it is a good and holy place. In Israel this week, all throughout the Jewish world, we'll celebrate a major festival that oddly most Jews don't even do or even remember. It's a shame, because in truth, Shavuot, Shavuos, which begins Tuesday night, continues Wednesday, is an important holiday on the Jewish calendar that few people give the attention it deserves. It was on Shavuot that, according to Jewish tradition, the greatest human interaction with God in all history took place. At this time of year, about 3,200 years ago, we received the Ten Commandments in dramatic fashion, according to the book of Exodus, with lightning and thunder and smoke and fire and an earthquake and the blasts of the shofar ringing in the desert air. And out of all that tumult, God's voice clearly conveyed the great message of morality and ethics that includes the Ten Commandments. Without the holiday of Shavuot, which begins Tuesday, we don't have the Torah. Without the Torah, we don't have Judaism. And of course, without Judaism, we would never have had Christianity or Islam or Western civilization. So Shavuot, or Shavuos as some Jews call it, matters very, very much. You know, when celebrating a holiday with this much importance, especially a profoundly underappreciated festival like Shavuot, it's important to talk about what we really care about in life. That's the real purpose for Shavuot. Well, in that spirit, here's a little play on the subject of Mount Sinai, where the Ten Commandments by tradition were given. It's from the great ensemble, the Boston Camerata, a little song about Moses, Mi al Har Chorev, literally, who on Mount Sinai spoke to God face to face. Mi al Har Chorev, a Sephardic melody for the holiday of Shavuot Shavuos, this coming Tuesday night and Wednesday. Don't miss it. When we return on Two Jewish, we'll find out what the boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is, how Israel addresses it, what dangers it poses, and much more, all when we come back on Two Jewish.
Safety. It's a word we take for granted at home and at the workplace, but sometimes safety isn't a sure thing. Environmental Strategies, Inc. is an environmental remediation company that's been promoting safe living in Arizona since 1989. Environmental Strategies specializes in asbestos and lead abatement, mold remediation, and industrial cleaning. In addition, they have a building and remodeling division that makes it convenient for clients to get all their services from one contractor. Environmental Strategies jobs range from seam tape removal in a single-family home to insulation removal in a Challenger Learjet aircraft and everything in between. So, if you're in need of asbestos or lead removal, mold remediation, industrial cleaning, or top-notch general contracting services, call Environmental Strategies today at 884-1114. Estimates and bids are free and confidential. Ken Goodman is the president, and he'd love to talk with you about your project. Environmental Strategies, serving all of Arizona since 1989. Call 884-1114.
Hi, Joe Spina, Mama's Pizza. When I was in junior high school, the best kisser in the eighth grade was Julie Mills. How did I know she was the best? Well, the truth is, I didn't. Because I was pretty shy back then, and including Julie, I only kissed a total of two girls. But to me, with my limited experience, Julie was the best. My point is, we almost never know when something is really the best because we haven't experienced everything else. And so it is with pizza. Sure, every day we hear Mama's Pizza is the best. It feels good to hear it, but still, we don't relax and take it for granted. After all, we're competing with a lot of pizzas out there. So, if you haven't tried Mama's Pizza yet, we humbly invite you to do it today. We believe you will think it's the best, and you'll remember it forever. Just like I remember kissing Julie Mills. Mama's Pizza with four convenient locations. Now repeat after me. Mama's Pizza.
Tucson Hebrew Academy is an independent school for children from kindergarten through eighth grade. It has a long-standing track record of academic excellence and an unparalleled integrated general and Judaic studies curriculum with a variety of music and fine arts classes combined with the award-winning sports program THA nourishes students in body, mind, and spirit. The atmosphere in the classroom encourages self-assured self-expression, critical thinking skills, and respect for diverse points of view. THA's low student-teacher ratio allows its highly qualified faculty to provide instruction based on the most up-to-date proven research methods in science, technology, math, and literature. THA students understand the relevance of Jewish values in the modern world. THA sees learning as a way of life and builds a strong sense of community. They are enrolling now. Please give your child the gift of a THA education. For more information on how to enroll your child and to schedule a tour, call 529-3888 or visit thaaz.org. That's 529-3888 for THA.
We're delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning, DJ Schneeweis. He is the coordinator of Israel's anti-boycott strategy, working for the Foreign Ministry, Boycott, Divestment, and Sanctions, BDNS, in the rather interesting nomenclature, is the latest assault on Israel's legitimacy. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Tell us a little bit about the overall strategy, what boycott, divestment, and sanctions really consists of.
BDS is an attempt to, it's a continuation of a long-standing ideological and political sort of campaign against Israel from Israel's enemies, but it's an attempt to borrow from the South African experience and to use that and use the same methods that people used in those days to bring about the end of the apartheid regime. the basic plan is to create an analogy in people's minds, to establish in people's minds the idea that Israel is the same as South Africa was then, and should be punished and dealt with in exactly the same way. It's fundamentally a propaganda campaign. It's about changing people's minds about Israel, and it's the idea that Israel is a criminal state, much as South Africa in those days was perceived to be, then people will buy into any kind of punishment or any kind of action that will be taken to punish and to exclude Israel from the natural sort of exchanges of international politics. So it's a new version of an old hostility.
It's this whole concept of delegitimizing Israel becomes a really subtle problem. It's a public relations problem, but it's other things as well. Talk a little bit about how Israel has begun to formulate a response.
Well, this word delegitimization is a rather unpleasant one. It's got too many syllables, and when we talk about it, we're really actually doing our enemy's job for us. There are people out there, they're not that many, but they're vocal, and they make themselves heard, and they're getting better at pushing forward their propaganda, who are fundamentally committed to trying to bring about the end of the State of Israel. Historically, there have been different types of efforts to do this. The Arab countries tried to invade us and destroy us militarily. We've seen waves of terrorism. This approach is one which is more in the realm of ideas, in the realm of propaganda, where they're trying to get the world to see us as a country which is beyond the pale, as a country which, by virtue of its supposed crimes, is a country that should be divested from, that should be sanctioned, that should be excluded from the international community. The word delegitimization refers to effectively what the objective of our enemies is. The objective being to take away the legitimacy of our country and thus bring about its demise. I prefer to use the word, and we're trying to use to describe the phenomenon more accurately, and rather than referring to delegitimization, we prefer to refer to the assault on Israel's legitimacy. What is happening here is there is an attack. It is being perpetrated by people who are hostile to our existence, and they are trying to take away a legitimacy that we have, and we have by right. And so what we're trying to do is to address the nature of this attack, to find out and identify who the people are, and to make sure that their radical, extreme, and hostile ideas do not become accepted in any way in the mainstream of Western societies.
We will talk much more with DJ Shnei Weiss, coordinator of Israel's anti-boycott strategy for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, when we come back on Too Jewish.
If your parents or other loved ones are in need of assisted living, consider making the choice that Dorothy Daniels' family made, Handmaker.
Living at Handmaker does make me feel very independent, like I was still in my house. The best part of it is I don't have to clean it.
Assisted living at Handmaker promotes an active and independent life. All needs are met, including weekly housekeeping and linen service, transportation to doctor's appointments, restaurants, banks, and shopping. And living at Handmaker is fun.
Every 2 weeks, there is a man who comes with a saxophone, and we dance, and I love that because I love to dance.
Handmaker is centrally located on Rosemont, just south of Grant, and includes 1 and 2 bedroom suites and cozy studios with patios and balconies.
I would recommend Handmaker to anyone because I feel very safe and secure here. The people that work here are very nice, considerate, and that means a lot.
For a tour and consultation, call 322-7035 or visit their website at handmaker.org. This Tuesday night, come to Temple Emmanuel for a unique and wonderful experience of learning and, well, great cheesecake. Our Tikkun Leil Shavuot interactive study session and cheesecake tasting and eating competition is Tuesday, June 7th at 8 p.m. for the holiday of Shavuot. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz explore the topic Between Heaven and Earth, God and Humanity Interact in dialogue and text, and everyone eats fabulous dairy desserts. Following Jewish custom, we'll study and argue till we simply don't have the strength, all fortified by the best free desserts in town. Don't forget to bring your favorite cheesecake or dairy dessert for our spectacular cheesecake bake-off. We'll keep eating and studying as long as we have the energy. Join the fun at Shavuot this Tuesday night at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. For more information, call Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at twojewishradio@yahoo.com or call 520-327-4501 or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can get CDs of past and present shows through the website or downloading them from the Apple iTunes Store as popular podcasts or from the website. We are now pleased and serene to welcome back a randomly recurring feature of Two Jewish, Zen Judaism. When faced with disaster, be calm and serene. Breathe deeply and fully. And then shry, Oy Gewalt, from your inner core. Consider the tree, standing in the face of rain and sun, weathering chaos of the world without bending. You can be like the tree. But you'll never get anywhere. Better to become an accountant like your cousin Bernie. Those were koans, koans of Zen Judaism. We welcome our maven on Israel, Guy Gelbart, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Guy, good morning.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
And Chag Sameach, Shavuot's coming up in a couple of days, the Feast of Weeks, big holiday, although big holiday that nobody remembers.
Well, I remember it. It's a great holiday. It's actually one of my favorites, you know. In Israel, every Chag Shavuot, usually all the adults have their cheese and wine festivals or parties. And for the kids, we have the Shavuot, the Bikurim festival, the bringing of the new fruits or the...
First fruits.
So it's a really fun holiday. For kids and for the adults.
So what do the kids do? Because I've been in in Israel for Shavuot, but I was in Jerusalem where everybody walked to the Temple Mount area. They walked to the Kotel. But it wasn't really a kids' festival. I understand it's a big thing on kibbutzim, too.
Exactly.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Kibbutzim is the place to be on Shavuot. Every kibbutz I know, they have a tradition of doing a big festival of bringing all the new fruits, the first fruits of the year. And it doesn't matter if it's really fruits or if it's something that comes from the industry or from the education system.
Oh.
So they arrange a bit. They build usually a big stage with hay on the sides. And they bring tractors that brings all the new fruits. And if they have a factory, they'll bring, for instance, a factory that makes pipes, they'll bring pipes with them in the tractor. And then, last but not least, the education system. Usually most kibbutzim today have kindergarten system, ECEs and stuff. So the first tractor to come will have the babies, the newborn, the really newborn babies with their mothers on the tractor. And it's so gorgeous, you know, to see them coming on the stage from the tractor with all those tiny smiles. Some of them cry, but it's really cute. It's really a big festival. And then, after the kids are really tired, you put them to bed. You get a babysitter, and usually at one of the friend's house, you have a cheese and wine party. Because, traditionally, Chag Shavuot is the holiday of cheese, and cheese needs to go with good wine.
You've got to have something to eat. You know, you can't just have cheese. You got to wash it down.
And Israel today have amazing wineries, so you can really get really good wines, especially red wines, in relatively low price, and it's really fun.
You know, it's fascinating because the reason we eat dairy on Shavuot is because by tradition, the Ten Commandments were given on Shavuot, and even the animals paused to hear the Ten Commandments, so you can't eat an animal on Shavuot. They were listening to the Ten Commandments, and so that's why cheesecake, cheese, all of these things. But the whole concept of a wine and cheese festival for Shavuot, it hasn't made it to America yet, but it probably should.
It's a great idea. And another idea that used to be was the fact that girls used to go out to the fields with white dresses because after the Omer count where you couldn't get married.
Couldn't get married, right.
Suddenly at Shavuot, you could. So the girls would go out with dresses and their brides would come and pick them up for massive marriages. That used to be in historical times.
Right, biblical
today
times.
They just wear nice dresses, but it's still nice.
All right. Well, it's a great way to celebrate Shavuot. Chag Shavuot Sameach, Chag Sameach, and we'll talk next week, Guy.
Chag Shavuot, Chag Bikurim Sameach.
When we come back, we'll hear from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, and get the old Jewish joke of the week. We visit weekly with the great restaurateur, Janos Wilder of Janos Restaurant, J-Bar, and Downtown Kitchen and Cocktails. Good morning, Janos.
Good morning, Rabbi.
It is the prettiest time of year now, isn't it?
It's J-Bar time. Time to sit outside on the porch, get a margarita. I didn't tell you this. We just won best margaritas in Tucson at J-Bar. Mm. Sit outside, have a margarita, serve some great food. Be thankful you live here in Southern Arizona.
It is a wonderful time of year. What's special on the menu now?
Well, right now, all our food from the farmers are coming in. So peas and pea shoots and carrots and radishes and citrus. So all of those things are finding their way on the menu in preparations with trout and rabbit and beef and duck. Great fun foods of the region. Great flavors. Great time to be there.
Boy, I'm hungry and thirsty just hearing about it. What's the phone number?
615-6100.
And it's www.janos.com.
Rabbi, you always know how to find me.
And I love to. Thanks, Janos.
Thank you, Rabbi.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in Southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reformed, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
There was a wedding not too long ago, and it calls to mind a comment that Benjamin Disraeli once made when he was Prime Minister of England, when one of the other MPs, or maybe someone in the House of Lords, more likely in the House of Lords, was ridiculing Jews. And he got up and said, while the distinguished members, ancient relatives, were painting themselves blue and running around naked, we were building the temple in Jerusalem under King David. But still, Jews, like all other Americans, are fascinated by the royal wedding and by royalty in general. Perhaps you can shed some light on this.
Well, 2 points. First, for people who don't know, and there may be one or two among your listeners, Disraeli was a British prime minister in the 19th century. And he was...
And Queen Victoria's favorite, actually.
Right. And he was of Jewish ancestry, although not a Jew himself. And interestingly, it was he and his associates who really were the earliest Zionists. It was these sort of British genteel anti-Semites who were, yes, it's fine to be friends with Jews, but I wouldn't want them in my club sorts of people, who suggested that a nice way of solving what was increasingly referred to as the Jewish question in the 19th century would be to set up a British bridgehead at the confluence of Asia, Africa, and Europe in Palestine, which at that point was part of the Ottoman Empire, and create a homeland for Jews there. And wouldn't it be wonderful to send all of England's Jews there to represent England instead of having them uncomfortably amongst us?
Amongst us and right. Like in Parliament.
Right.
And so that eventually led to philo-Semites like Arthur James Balfour in the Balfour Declaration.
Right. And this is a sentiment that to some extent has persisted to this day in England in equally nice and genteel ways. There isn't a lot of violent anti-Semitism in England, but there is that kind of background noise. Now, in terms of this wedding, this small family affair, I mean, it is interesting that
small dysfunctional family affair.
Americans are so obsessed with royalty and so taken by it. We pride ourselves on being a classless society of almost infinite social mobility and all that. And yet, we love the trappings of titles and precedence and do we curtsy or not? Do we do a full bow or not? We want to get it right. We're fascinated by protocol, although we don't observe it much ourselves. Recently, I had
Let
an airline...
Let me interrupt you, Tom.
Sure, please.
No, sorry. I just wanted to show I don't pay attention to the protocol either.
No.
So.
I recently had an airline guy on the phone who said, excuse me for a moment while I put you on hold, please. And he said so many pleases and thank yous. I said, you must not be from Arizona because I rarely hear please and thank you in Arizona. People are very friendly and very nice, but the protocol of please and thank you is rapidly vanishing and from American usage in general. And yet we are so taken by all the trappings of the badges and the sashes and the titles. And it's an interesting field for speculation is why? Is it because we tore ourselves prematurely away from that and created a democracy that we weren't completely ready for emotionally? Why is it that we set up a presidency and a White House that were so accessible? We say, Mr. President. We don't say Your Highness or Your Majesty or anything like that. I mean, it's the whole thing is a very interesting sociological question about which we could talk for many hours, but I see we've come to the end of our time. So until next week.
Thank you, Tom. I guess I would simply add, thank you profusely and from the bottom of my heart for that excellent disquisition on such a sensitive subject. And please come back next week.
It was entirely my pleasure, and you are most welcome.
We'll talk next week. And now it's time for the old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. The local bar was so sure its bartender was the strongest man around, they offered a standing $1,000 bet. The bartender would squeeze a lemon until all the juice ran into a glass and hand the lemon to a patron. Anybody who could squeeze one more drop of juice out would win the money. Lots of people tried over the years, football players, weightlifters, longshoremen, but nobody could do it. One day, this scrawny little Jewish fellow came into the bar, wearing thick glasses and a bad suit, and said in a squeaky voice, "I'd like to try the bet." After the laughter died down, the bartender said, "Okay," grabbed a lemon, squeezed away. Then he handed the wrinkled remains of the rind to the Jewish guy. But the crowd's laughter turned to silence as the man clenched his fist around the lemon, and 6 drops fell into the glass. The crowd cheered. The bartender paid out the $1,000 and asked the little Jewish guy, "What do you do for a living? A lumberjack, a weightlifter, what?" And the Jewish guy said, "I raise money for the Jewish Federation." That was the old Jewish joke of the week. Special feature to Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and escape the clutches of the Federation. And now a word of Torah. This week our portion, Bahalotcha, from the Book of Numbers, is filled with incidents and events from wilderness days, as well as a couple of important commandments. It's in this portion that the instructions are given to create the first menorah, the 7-branched candelabrum that has become the enduring symbol of Judaism. It's also here that we get the first rumblings of rebellion that will explode into full-fledged revolt against Moses and Aaron in just a few more weeks in the disastrous story of Korach. But most significant in this week's parsha is a peculiar little story about gossip. Moses has married a new wife, and his brother and sister, Aaron and Miriam, don't think much of her. And so Aaron and Miriam begin to talk about her and Moses, behind his back, circulating rumors and gossip. She isn't of the right ethnicity. They don't like her influence on Moses. She probably laughs inappropriately or wears her hair too long or loose. The response by God is swift and decisive. Miriam, although oddly and disturbingly not Aaron, Miriam comes down with a dread ailment. Moses' siblings realize the error of their gossiping ways, and they repent and are healed. But the point is made. Gossip and slander are among the most destructive influences in society. If we don't avoid them, we will indeed have tsoras, trouble, and heartache. If we can avoid them, we have every chance to build a society based in holiness and good. It's a great message today. As the Talmud has it, gossip hurts 3 people: the speaker, the listener, and the subject. It hurts the person who gossips, the one who listens to gossip, and the person who is gossiped about. All are morally damaged by the experience, and no one benefits. Circulating rumors, sharing personal information about others, accurate or not, in person or on the web, is not the way to create genuine community or intimacy. Lashon hara, unethical use of speech, is attractive, it's fun, but it is wrong and destructive. There are many other things we can talk about, and all are more valuable. A famous dictum teaches that great minds speak about ideas, smaller minds about events, and the smallest minds speak about others. May we learn from this portion of Bahalotcha that the best way to use speech is to build and heal and learn, not to gossip. When we come back on Too Jewish, the brilliant DJ Shni Weiss of Israel's foreign ministry will fill us in on how Israel's demonizers are working to attack its very legitimacy as a state, and how Israel is now responding. We'll be back in a moment on Too Jewish.
When you're looking to buy or sell your home, you probably want Tucson's best realtor on your side. That realtor is Jill Rich. As real estate values change, it's comforting to know that Jill Rich knows Tucson's real estate landscape. She follows the trends. She knows the neighborhoods. She even knows how to help you find financing. But most importantly, Jill cares. It doesn't matter if you're looking for a starter home or a castle. It's like having your bubby in the realty business. For sellers, Jill will develop a personal marketing program that'll sell your house fast. There's no one who knows Tucson real estate better. You can reach Jill Rich at Long Realty's River and Campbell office. Call 349-0174. Jill Rich, providing strong representation in a caring way. Call 349-0174.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
A cutting-edge battle over circumcision is slicing through the usual political morass in San Francisco and Santa Monica. But that's not good news for Jews, and it's really no joke. Both cities, bastions of liberal activism in some eyes, and, well, communist anti-Semites to others, have put on the ballot measures that would ban Brit Milah in their jurisdictions. While neither measure is likely to pass, and both would probably be held unconstitutional for creating restrictions on religious freedom in America, it is not a good thing that these anti-circumcision measures will appear on the ballot. Having lived in Santa Monica for 5 years, as I did, we used to call it the People's Republic of Santa Monica in those days, and having spent lots of time in San Francisco, I can tell you that they are very nice places. But the concept that a 3,800-year-old religious practice that goes back to Abraham and underlies the essential notion of covenant, which is so central to Judaism, is now somehow barbaric or ruins guys' lives is, well, nuts. No pun intended. In any case, a variety of Jewish organizations are responding aggressively, but when you factor in measures banning not only Brit Milah, but ritual slaughter, Shechita, in Scandinavia and New Zealand, you begin to wonder why people seem to spend so much time and effort trying to mess with Jews. We are less than 1% of the world's population, much less actually, and we contribute hugely in so many positive ways. Even if these practices, circumcision, milah, and shechita, ritual slaughter, are somehow negative, which they are most decidedly not, why so much focus and energy on us? Frankly, I am not the first person to claim anti-Semitism. Sometimes I'm the last. But what the heck else can we call it? Over 30,000 Israelis gathered last week for the annual March Through Jerusalem for Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem Day, honoring the reunification of the city in 1967 in the Six-Day War, 44 years ago. This annual march, led by the religious Zionist community, in which participants march and dance with flags throughout the city, culminates in dancing at the Kotel Plaza, the Western Wall. It made its way this year through the largely Palestinian Eastern Jerusalem neighborhood of Sheikh Jarrah. While the parade in most years takes place largely in Western Jerusalem, and by the way, creates the biggest traffic jam I have ever personally seen, this year the parade was rerouted through the eastern sector in order to avoid the new light rail tracks for the brand new network opening in a week or two. Jerusalem will never be divided, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said during a speech in the Merkaz Harav Yeshiva in honor of Yom Yerushalayim. There's nothing more holy to us than Jerusalem. We'll protect Jerusalem, its unity, and we'll build and develop it. The Merkaz Harav Yeshiva was a site of a terror attack 3 years ago in 2008 when a Palestinian gunman murdered 8 students. Next year in a rebuilt Jerusalem, Netanyahu concluded, well, it's a building. And for the third time since 2007, Britain's largest academic union has voted to adopt an academic and cultural boycott of Israel. Oh, goody. The resolution was passed at their annual conference in Harrogate, Yorkshire. In voting to move forward with the sanctions, the University and College Union, representing more than 120,000 academics across the UK, ignored the legal advice it got after the first boycott vote in 2007. Lawyers then told the union a boycott would be unlawful and cannot be implemented, according to the union's website. Academic Friends of Israel, a group formed in 2002 to fight academic boycotts of Israel by British organizations, moved quickly to condemn the UCU vote. I recognize, of course, many of these issues are open to debate and discussion, and legitimate criticism of Israel is acceptable, AFI Director Ronnie Fraser said, but the recitation of a long list of allegations against Israel and Israel alone, without any recognition that Palestinians might bear any guilt or responsibility for the current impasse or for their own crimes against Israelis, is one-sided and anti-Semitic. Indeed, it is. And that's the news of Jews around the world.
Welcome back to Too Jewish This Morning. Our guest, DJ Schneeweis, he's the coordinator of Israel's anti-boycott strategy, working against boycott, divestment, and sanctions, the assault on Israel's legitimacy, works for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Israel. This is sort of a position created sort of for you, by you. Tell us a little bit about how that evolved.
Well, the...
I don't even know how to introduce the question. So.
As I've said already, Israel has been subject to attack from those who disapprove of it, who disagree with our existence, from the word go. And we've dealt with these challenges through the years.
It's not the first boycott Israel's
absolutely
faced.
Absolutely. It's not the first boycott we've faced, and it's not the first time that some people are trying to get together to put out ideas such as Israel equals South Africa. We had the Zionism is racism resolution at the UN already a generation ago.
Yeah.
And again, so this stuff is not new. But what we have found is that the way we were deployed, the way we were structured, did not exactly meet the evolution, if you like, or the mutation of this old hostility. And we felt the need to bring in an attempt to try and bring slightly more coherence to the elements that we already had in place. We have a public diplomacy arm, we have a legal arm, we have a commercial arm. The government and the country has a huge array of different resources that are being deployed in order to promote Israel's place among the nations and to promote our national interests and to promote the interests of the Jewish people as a whole. But in meeting the specific challenges that we found that we were facing more and more, specific attempts to call on universities to boycott Israeli academics, specific attempts to bring cooperatives and supermarket chains to stop stocking Israeli goods and things like that. We needed to just sort of, if you like, bring a fresh pair of eyes to the business and to make sure that we were focusing on these new types, these new versions of hostility and action, and making sure that we were doing our best to meet them.
There's a lot of talk here about rebranding and the kind of ways in which Israel has been branded by its opposition, by those who hate Israel, and what Israel needs to do to rebrand. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure, that's a great question. We already for many years, we at the Foreign Ministry, we've been doing surveys and polling and everything else, trying to assess how best to communicate our message to the outside world. When we also understand that from this polling and from the data, that an overwhelming majority of people, if we look beyond our own communities and we look out at the outside world, an overwhelming majority of people are not actually particularly interested in our story in one way or another. Those who look at us and are interested in our story from the political point of view, obviously we have to address political issues and of course there are matters of state, important issues of our relations with the Palestinians and so on that we must address directly. But there's a huge amount of many, many people across Western societies in the United States and elsewhere, who are interested in other things. They're interested in lifestyle issues. They're interested in high tech. They're interested in the environment, and also on these issues, Israel has an immense story to tell, a great story to tell, technologies to offer, and a life that is relevant and sort of action and involvement that are relevant and perhaps even interesting and of value to others around the world. And so we have initiated here already for quite a few years an attempt to promote what we understand to be the brand of Israel, the Israel brand. We promote our creativity and the innovation and the liberal society that we have here, and so on.
Talk a little bit about who is behind the kind of BDS movement. Some of them are kind of the usual suspects. We know that there's strong elements in the Arab world, but there's a lot of other people, people on the left, people at the university. Can you address that a little bit?
Sure. The what we're finding is that in the last 10 years or so, we've seen radical left groups coalesce, get together with radical Islamic groups. And they've found a common purpose, which is a hatred of Israel and also a hatred of the United States often.
Really strange bedfellows when you think about it.
Absolutely. And when you think about it, you realize that what is motivating them here, given that they are setting aside their differences on so many other issues, what is motivating them here is a fundamental animosity towards Israel and towards Western values, or accepted Western values. These radical groups are very much at the engine of this current form of hostility to Israel. There is a lot of backing from within the Arab world, not necessarily financial, though probably some financial, but backing in terms of inspiration and sort of moral support. And also, you know, we see the ongoing efforts of demonization, all sorts of awful things in the Arab media. And so there's a sort of, if you like, an environment that is created in many Muslim circles and in some non-Muslim circles in the West, which then produces and sort of cultivates ordinary, you know, the sort of the activists who then become the leaders on campus or in other areas within the church, often within some church groups. We see these sort of activists cultivated, and they then go about the business of trying to mobilize more people. And so they try and create noise and get attention, and they put, you know, they table ideas into, you know, put resolutions forward in their own civic institutions, whether it's the labor movement or in the church group or in the local co-op and so on. And so we're seeing sort of like these sort of mushrooms sprouting here and there, very localized expressions, but when we look at it from a global point of view, it becomes very clear that this is a global phenomenon. So it's not really, I'd be wary of arguing that there is one sort of string pulling coordinating force. What has happened here is that especially in this age of internet, where everyone can learn from everyone else across the world in 2 seconds flat, they can be copying each other and working off the same play sheet. We have, if you like, an ecosystem of organizations and individuals who are involved in trying to kick Israel around, and we have to look at who they are rather than who's trying to mobilize them. We also, most importantly, have to look at who they're trying to influence. And we have to make sure that we're in touch with those people who they're trying to influence, the real people of importance in our communities, whether it's local church leaders or religious leaders or local politicians or local media people. And in each community, we have to reach out to those people and make sure they understand the nature of this campaign, they understand the real agenda of these people, of these hostile people. And that way we can ensure that the people who count in our society do not fall victim to the hostile anti-Israeli agenda.
There have been some victories in your native Australia. You've been in Israel a long time. There was a recent incident. Can you talk about that?
Sure. There was an attempt. Like I say, these guys try and infiltrate civic institutions, so they were able to get their agenda through the Greens Party in Sydney, in one of the local councils there, get a boycott agenda adopted by the local council. This immediately aroused a whole array of pushback from people who hadn't been consulted, local constituents who hadn't been consulted, and local Jewish community which was offended, and other politicians who felt that this was a distraction and a failure of the local council to address its responsibilities to look after the local needs of their community. So it became a whole big ruckus, and eventually the pro-BDS proponents had to withdraw their decision and sort of revoke their decision under massive public political and public pressure. So what at first looked like a BDS victory in Sydney actually became quite a significant BDS defeat.
Now, and what people may not have realized is if they're going to boycott Israel, that means they have to boycott any computer that might have an Israeli chip in it, somebody that was using Skype. There's a lot of Israeli inventions that people don't really think about.
Absolutely, and this goes to the real heart of the matter, that this campaign, a boycott campaign, and this assault on Israel's legitimacy, it is a propaganda campaign. They are less interested in worrying whether someone is buying a computer with Israeli technology inside it. That's not where they're at. They're in the business of creating in people's minds the idea that Israel should be boycotted. And once they do that effectively enough, then that will percolate up into the political system, and politicians won't support us, and countries will turn against us. That is their objective. They're less interested in the practical boycott and much more interested in the damage to our reputation that they believe that they can achieve through this means.
You know, it occurs to me that the goal of the boycott, the divestment, sanctions movement is really not to help a single Palestinian. It's just to hurt Israel in some way or another.
Absolutely. And again, I don't think we should overstate the size of this boycott movement or their impact. They are a fringe movement. But the danger is that their ideas will gain traction. And that will happen if we don't stand up to them. That will happen if we don't identify the maliciousness of what is being said by these people. And they do pop up on a campus and in a local community, and so we have to be vigilant to make sure that anywhere they do pop up, we immediately we immediately stand our ground and make sure that people don't fall victim to their agenda. So we have to also understand that in terms of what they're really saying, it's actually relevant to each and every member of the Jewish communities around the world. Because if they're saying that Israel is a criminal country, then they're also saying that those who support Israel are somehow associated with a criminal. They're accomplices to a crime. If they're saying that Israel is not legitimate, which is what they're saying, then supporting Israel is also, by extension, something that is not particularly legitimate. So they're actually taking aim at a fundamental aspect of Jewish identity, not for every Jew perhaps, but for an overwhelming number of Jews around the world. And so this is actually a genuinely insidious attempt to try and drive a wedge between Jews around the world and Israel, and to drive a wedge between those who support Israel, whether they are Jewish or not, and the rest of society. And so everyone actually has a role to play in this, in fending this off, because wherever this kind of attitude turns up, it's usually happening in sort of, if you like, in civil society. And so we're all members of civil society. We all have colleagues at work. We all have relationships and involvements in this or that civic institution or voluntary association or whatever it might be. And so it's in those arenas where we have to make sure that people understand who we are, what Israel stands for, why it needs to exist, why it has a right to defend itself, and what it brings and contributes to the world, and why it is completely legitimate that ordinary American citizens should identify with Israel and support it. And as long as we're conveying those kinds of messages, then we're going to be able to fend off the BDS agenda.
And with your great work. I want to thank DJ Schneeweis for a great visit here on Too Jewish.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical play out on Too Jewish.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
This Tuesday night, come to Temple Emmanuel for a unique and wonderful experience of learning and, well, great cheesecake. Our Tikkun Leil Shavuot interactive study session and cheesecake tasting and eating competition is Tuesday, June 7th at 8 p.m. for the holiday of Shavuot. Rabbi Sam Kohan and Rabbi Jason Holtz explore the topic Between Heaven and Earth, God and Humanity Interact in dialogue and text, and everyone eats fabulous dairy desserts. Following Jewish custom, we'll study and argue till we simply don't have the strength, all fortified by the best free desserts in town. Don't forget to bring your favorite cheesecake or dairy dessert for our spectacular Cheesecake Bake Off. We'll keep eating and studying as long as we have the energy. Join the fun at Shavuot this Tuesday night at Temple Emmanuel, 225 North Country Club Road. For more information, call Temple Emmanuel at 327-4501.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Next week, our guest will be Jonathan Edelman, one of the top experts on Middle East politics in the country, talking about the impact and consequences of the Arab Spring. Our playout this morning comes from Mark Bloom. It's a fun cut called Freilach Funk, believe it or not. My friends, have a Chag Shavuot Sameach, a good Yom Tov, a Shavua Tov, a good week, and some delicious dairy, and a week, we pray, of peace.
The preceding program was produced and paid for by Temple Emmanuel.